Good afternoon. My name is Cheryl, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Jim Kelso Morgan Asset Management conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer period. If you would like to pose a question during this time, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. It is now my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Jim Kelso. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining me here. And I want to, special thank you to Courtney for putting this together just on a very quick notice. We've obviously got a lot of questions here today, and I know a lot of you are concerned with the volatility. A lot of it is we've talked about before with regard to subprime lending, with regard to some of the mortgage-backed paper that we're involved with. But there was also an article out today that we did not make any comments on. In fact, I was asked a couple of days ago about the article. I didn't understand exactly what was being asked of me, and I just said, I'm not interested in commenting on that. So in hindsight, it may have been better if I did make some comments there that may have been a little more factually correct. Just real quickly, we do have almost all rated subprime paper. The non-rated portion of our portfolio is largely related to CDOs, CLOs, and trust preferred portfolios where we have the equity participation in those. And we could probably get a rating on those, but we choose not to because it's just cheaper to do it that way. So our returns are better if we minimize the expenses. And so it is an allocation that we're comfortable with and we've been involved with for years. So the other point I will make is that we've been involved in subprime lending for since the very inception of the funds. In fact, the very first subprime paper we're involved with was the first plus high loan to value paper going back into 1998-97 time frame whenever we were involved there, Empire Financial, Ditech, and the like. So there's not a lot of margin in high FICO prime loans. That's just not a, you're not going to get much yield there. And again, we're running a high yield fund here. So there's not many mud puddles out there that we've not stepped in at some point along the way. And I just would like to point out that last year at this exact period of time, last year, the come apart was in General Motors. Corporate spreads were blowing up. General Motors, the 8 3/8 of 33 had gone from about 90 cents on the dollar down to about 60 cents on the dollar. And there was widespread concern regarding the viability of the auto industry in the United States, including Ford as well. Ford followed suit with GM there. Now those bonds are back up to 90, and so is Ford. So the market goes and has fits, and that just is we're all accustomed to that. The equity market is down about 4% in 2 weeks, and so that's the world we live in. And as the Fed continues to take liquidity out of the system via higher short-term rates and sort of soaking up liquidity in the system, I believe that's, we really have to deal with that on an ongoing basis now that the crisis du jour now is subprime mortgage lending. We probably cut our allocation to subprime in half in the past 12 months, maybe going back 15 months, we preferred corporate credit to consumer credit. Credit cards have gone through this. Manufactured housing has gone through this. That would be mobile home loans. So this is not something that's sort of new. It just grabs a lot of headlines. And most of the distress is in the 06 and 07 vintage originations, whether it be from New Century or Ameriquest or Option One or whoever. But just a quick primer, subprime is less than prime credit, someone who's had that doesn't have a good credit history. Prime is generally, say, 725 and over on the FICO score, and subprime paper is generally 600 to 640 on the FICO score. Now, that's a much higher margin loan. A loan has usually is a 228 or a 2 year fix, and then a step, becomes a 1 year ARM in year two, at which point you usually get a lot of prepays, and that's also whenever you begin to get a lot of delinquencies crop up as well as the payment steps up if they don't refinance. So our 04 and 05 vintage subprime paper looks like it's performing pretty well as expected. You see, you don't expect subprime paper to perform flawlessly. You expect that it will have, in fact, some delinquencies and defaults. And the pools are built generally to sustain you know, a certain amount of cumulative losses in those pools. No doubt some are not working, and some are going to take losses. But that would be the case also in a corporate portfolio of high yield. If we put together 100 corporate names, then we would expect some of those to have some problems. And you would go through periods of time when even a portfolio of corporate bonds would become priced a bit on the skittish side as liquidity to corporate credits dried up, as was the case in the 2000, 2001, 2002 timeframe. Corporate liquidity dried up. The average triple C credit traded to about 50 cents on the dollar, and the spread relationship of the Lehman High Yield Index went to about 1,400 basis points over Treasuries. That, by the way, has now about 250 basis points over Treasuries. So you want to talk about something that's fully priced and has a lot of liquidity available to it. That's the corporate high-yield sector. We also saw the same thing occurring in stocks in the late 90s and in the very earliest part of 2000 before that sector, you know, the liquidity rotated out of stocks and back into other places. So a lot of that money flowed into real estate. So that creates a bit of a bubble here in real estate, and the subprime lenders who got very aggressive extended their relaxed or extended their credit underwriting criteria tend to have made the worst loans or the most aggressive loans, the most sketchy loans, whatever you want to call it, in 06 and 07. That, of course, is now tightening up, but we're going to have to plow through some tough ground here with regard to the fallout of these, because it was subprime's about 10% of the overall mortgage market. Other than that, mortgage collateral is performing pretty well. Generally speaking, over economic cycles, assets secured by or loans secured by primary residences have been good assets over the course of economic cycles. This one will probably test some of that. Then again, we've had this happen before and various other types of assets. So we do have some subprime exposure. Most of our exposure is in the 04 and 05 vintage. A few 06 bonds. Some look okay. Others, I think, are not going to do quite as well. The overall exposure is somewhere in the 14 to 15%, 13 to 15% range of assets. That's been cut in half from where we were at one time. In fact, a very large part of our portfolio was subprime going back into 04 and 05 timeframe. It was one of our most actively traded sectors of our portfolio. Consequently, we also had some aircraft collateral in 2001 whenever the planes crashed into the World Trade Center. And, of course, those went through a enormously tough time. Couldn't give away aircraft collateral, and now that is very, very hot. In fact, you've heard me speak many times of how well the aircraft sector has done, but that's probably so well bid now we need to be selling it. So market goes through these fits, and I'm not making light of the fact that this is a difficult time for subprime, and pricing is going to be difficult, and there's going to be volatility. But, to be perfectly honest, the whole time I've been running these funds, we've had to deal with these issues all along the way. I mean, WorldCom, we had some bonds in WorldCom. We couldn't figure out what was going on there, so we took some pain on WorldCom going back many years. So the asset classes and the categories of assets that we're dealing with are always going to have some issues. They're not going to be always easily dealt with, but we find that generally speaking, whenever the market loves an asset class, you should sell it. And whenever the market hates an asset class relentlessly, you should buy it. That is a very difficult tax to hold, but it tends to be one that's profitable over time. So we're going to go through some mark-to-market pain with regard to how these bonds are going to be marked and traded and that sort of thing. But frankly, I've been going through the portfolio over and over. I see a lot of bonds that I just don't see how they're not going to pay. There's enough credit enhancement and enough deleveraging that's occurred in the bonds, and deleveraging meaning that a lot of the pool has already paid off and the mortgages are paying. There are some delinquencies, but even if you wipe those out of the pool, there should be enough collateral to pay our bonds. So the marketplace just doesn't have any room for them right now. whenever the broker dealers decide they don't want to bid, then you know, Merrill begins to pull their lines from their from New Century and that sort of thing, then you're going to get a lot of volatility. Keeping in mind that the exact same thing happens to corporates, the exact same thing happens to manufactured housing, a la the Conseco GreenTree situation. So there are opportunities, and those of you who follow our funds closely will notice that we've been able to earn a little more with regard to our dividends in the last couple of months. This is the sort of market volatility that we can, in fact, take advantage of and buy some assets that make sense for us that will produce a lot of cash flow in the future. Last year, the market was so calm, so well bid, everything was so so even, such an even keel and so well bid that we didn't have much opportunity. In fact, it has hurt our dividend capacity over the last year or so. And so this is really the first opportunity we've had really in almost 2 years since we did RHY. RHY was our last closed-end fund, and it came, we were able to set a lot of trades up at the very end of 05. In the fourth quarter of 05, we had a good opportunity to buy some things. A lot of the things that we wound up owning in RHY that priced in January of 06 was advantageously priced. But since that point in time, which is 15, 16 months back, we really haven't had any market volatility to speak of. So we want to try to take advantage of this. I want to let you know that yeah, we do have some subprime exposure. We're watching that. The mark to market on it is going to probably be, you know, and has been, a bit concerning to me, but frankly, I'm looking at the end of the day whether or not I think the bonds are going to pay, and I believe that's going to. I believe that we do have bonds that are probably going to pay, and we'll make some money with. In fact, we've done so in the past. A lot of our performance in 04-05 time frame was boosted by subprime. We had traded a lot of paper, so in subprime, I think that is. Kind of covers most of my comments. I think that everything today is really regarding the volatility today and certainly the article that was out in New York Times. I made no comments on that. So there are a number of figures in there that are a bit contradictory and are not correct. But then again, I'm not, I don't know that the press has ever been particularly concerned about letting the truth get in the way of a good story. So I did choose to not make comments on that, and maybe I should have. But probably would, if they asked me again today, I'd probably say no again. Anyway, let me open up for a few questions here. I'll try to take a few questions. Don't want to drag out too long, but again, subprime market is one that was used to exist well before we got here. There's always been, subprimes have always been around as loans to higher risk borrowers. The margins are higher, and in fact, that's exactly what credit card loans are. Is it's even a higher risk loan, but you get a higher interest rate on that. So, and all, of course, all of you know that you could, even if you wanted to, get a credit card for your dog. So subprime is a little bit more restrictive than that, but apparently in 06, it wasn't a whole lot more restrictive than that. So let me take a few questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to pose a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Barbara Metcalf.
Hey, Jim. Mike Gibbs. I'm posing as Barbara Metcalf.
Mike Gibbs, my goodness, I am very glad to hear from you today.
I'm glad to be talking to you, no doubt about that. 13 to 15% exposure in the subprime market. What percentage of the income for the portfolio comes from that? Is it about the same level, 13 to 15%?
Probably so. It could be slightly higher, Mike.
Okay.
Which I don't know that. I don't know that exact figure, Mike. But I'm guessing it would be slightly higher because if I look at the income contribution from corporates and from our equity holdings, they're going to be lower.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's just been better yield there to begin with. A little more yield is there, and most of the subprime mortgage-backed securities are LIBOR-based floaters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with that in mind, we've had 2 years of Fed tightening, and so those coupons have been ratcheting up. And so really now for the last 6 months, the coupons have been sort of stable, but we've had a period of time where, particularly going back in 04 and 05, one of the reasons that subprime helped us so much was because we bought bonds that were LIBOR-based floaters. The Fed raised rates from 1 to 5.25, and of course that put 425 basis points on our floaters.
Okay.
So yeah, it may be with regard to actual. If you had 14% in subprime, you know, its income contribution, you know, would be at least that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly higher.
Yeah.
Now, are all the funds I'm talking open end, and this is just high yield, the open end high yield, and then the four closed end funds. Do they all pretty much look the same across the board as far as the percentage that might be in subprime?
Very, very close.
Okay.
Very, very close. Probably RHY has a little bit higher percentage.
Mm-hmm.
There were some opportunities there when we put the fund together that we put maybe a little bit higher percentage there. I think RMH has the lowest of the percentages there.
Okay.
So I think you could probably bracket, say, 12 to 17 and get the lowest and the highest.
Okay. I will ask you one more, then I'll get off so others can jump on. And this is what I'm trying to lay out in my mind to communicate with my clients. If I have a 13 to 15% exposure to an asset class like subprime, and it's my understanding that probably in a worst case foreclosure, liquidate properties, things like that, maybe you take a 35% hit. So a 35% hit of, say, 15% probably gets me about 5.25%.
Yeah.
That would be my absolute worst case scenario, but then when I add the 10% dividend back in or somewhere close to that, I'm still going to net a positive 5 or 6% rate of return over a 12-month period of time. That's how I'm trying to position it with my clients. I just want to make sure if I'm communicating it properly in a total worst case scenario.
Well, let's be careful about calling anything a total worst case scenario.
Well, I understand.
It's
okay.
Very difficult to come up with numbers like that, but you know, that's exactly what I do. In fact, I've got a bond, one bond in particular that was an old manufactured housing bond that was issued by Oakwood, and it was just a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
It was just awful. But it was done back in, 1999. And, the bids I got for that bond were just so bad because they were taking the worst case default scenarios, you know, from 2 or 3 years back
mm-hmm.
in manufactured housing, and a trader will extrapolate that. Say the CDRs or the default rate,
mm-hmm.
the compounding default rate, or constant default rate on that bond was running it at 8%. 8% default rate in that old manufactured housing bond. Well, a trader looking at that bond just to make sure he gets a good deal will probably run a 10 or 11% constant default rate forever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so the price on that bond went to about 15 cents on the dollar, all the time continuing to pay its coupon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the CDR now has dropped back to about 4, okay, after, 4 years of seasoning, a lot of bad loans have gone through. The bond will never recover par, but it's certainly worth a lot more today than it was. So there is a period of time in a lot of these that will go through like when you start thinking about what worst-case scenario is going to be, it's today and maybe for the next few months, is when we're going to get those high default rates that look delinquencies and default rates, but then we're probably going to see a period when it settles down and bonds are going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you're really sort of taking today and extrapolating from today generally is probably not a good idea if you're thinking about, figuring out what your worst case scenario would be. But nevertheless, I'm going through looking at bonds and looking at where my credit enhancement is. So if a bond was originally issued with a 1%, credit enhancement, that is 1% over-collateralization or protection, and that credit enhancement has grown to 4% as the pool has paid down, then, I'm looking at how much pain can this bond take before it begins to erode into my principal or cut into my cash flows. And as long as the credit enhancement is edging up, that means the credit is actually getting a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a little more protection. I was just showing Courtney one earlier today that has grown from 4% to 15%. The bond got marked down 10 points yesterday. And if I take every loan that's delinquent or in foreclosure and just wipe it out at zero, I still have a money good bond
mm-hmm.
because the credit enhancement's up to almost to 15%. But that bond took a pretty nasty mark yesterday. So that's what's happening. And I think that we just have to play through here. And the other thing is that if I'm running a high yield fund that is involved in anything other than corporate bonds, you know, it'd be surprising that we weren't involved in some subprime, some subprime category. So having taken our exposure to half of what we were, you know, a year and a half ago, I think is probably a pretty good move on our part. In fact, I'm real glad of that. I wouldn't mind if taking it down a little further, but we were targeting getting it down to about 10%. But I don't know that I would ever have gone out of it completely, because it is a high yield asset category and it does work.
That's great. Thank you, Jim.
Sure.
Your next question comes from Jim Kane.
Actually, what do I do?
You're good.
You handled it for me on the last call with Mike. Thank you.
Certainly.
Your next question comes from Jack Mayer.
Jim?
Yes.
You mentioned that roughly 13 to 15% is subprime. When you and Courtney were going over the portfolio today and going over a lot of bonds, as you said, that you found that there was no possible way that they wouldn't pay, were those included in that 13 to 15% of the subprime?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And again, there's lots of line items here to go through, Jack, so I only picked out several of them, began to just kind of comb through and just reassure myself of, you know, what was the work that I did originally, what was I thinking,
right,
and make sure I was still, you know, on cue here. But that still is not going to eliminate, you know, mark-to-market, you know, volatility.
Sure.
You know, last spring, you know, we had, you know, GM paper, and we had Dura Automotive, and we had other, you know, corporate items that went through a lot of stress during that period of time. So, you know, you'll have to play through here to find out the bottom line.
Okay, that's what I had. Thank you.
Okay.
Your next question comes from Trey Wolfarger.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Trey.
Hey, I got a quick question. As a percentage of the overall portfolios on the closed-end funds, how much cash is in those portfolios to take advantage of some of this volatility?
Well, not a lot right now, Trey. We've actually put a lot of that to work.
Okay.
This market dislocation, we've really been turning the portfolio over a great deal. We've had to sharpen our pencil with regard to managing the cash in those portfolios because of the cost of capital. That is, our borrowed assets have gone up so much. We have to really keep it pretty well employed. But we are rotating out of some other assets into buy and putting some more money to work here.
Okay.
And our earnings have improved.
Okay, that's all I had.
Okay.
Your next question comes from Alan Gottlieb.
Jim, thank you. Just following up from what you just mentioned, first of all, what is the cost of borrowing money today? What was the cost of borrowing money 6 months ago? And what was the cost of borrowing money 1 year ago on the levered funds?
Okay. Let me answer that in a more general format, Alan. Our funding for those closed-end funds is based on LIBOR,
uh-huh.
1 month, 3 month, and 6 month LIBOR. When we first began the closed-end fund process, our first loan facility probably cost us LIBOR plus 70 basis points. So going back, say, 3 years, LIBOR was at 1. We probably had to pay 1.7 to 1.75% for that loan. As mm-hmm. we grew our assets and began to negotiate with other vendors, we were able to get that spread over LIBOR reduced rather dramatically. So I would say, generally speaking, we're probably paying on borrowed money that comes to, 300, somewhere in the neighborhood of $600 million borrowed across the four high-income closed-end funds would be approximately LIBOR plus 12 to 15 basis points. Okay, depending on the facility and the timing.
Okay.
Okay, so LIBOR has gone from just over 1% in 2004 to about 5.32% now. So while LIBOR has gone up 400-plus basis points, we've been able to collapse our spread about 50 to 60 basis points. But that you can get the picture pretty quickly there that the borrowed money does cost us significantly more these days.
Sure.
Than it did 3 years ago.
And my other questions pertain to the intermediate fund.
Okay.
It did not make any mention in the Times article of there being any subprime exposure there. Is that accurate?
No, there is subprime exposure there as well. It is
what percent?
Oh, it's more like, say, 9 or 10%. It's lower, and the bonds are further up the credit stack. And it's just not nearly as dramatic a story. Therefore, they didn't put it in there.
Okay. And what has been the price performance of the 9 to 10% in the intermediate fund in the last
Well, the one I mentioned one bond. I mentioned the bond earlier in a conversation, I believe, that took about that was marked down about 10 points here in the last couple of days, and that was in the intermediate fund. And it was it was the one that I mentioned that has, you know, 15% credit enhancement, and I just don't see how it can't pay. It's there's only, you know, a couple of years left. All of the loans that are delinquent and or in foreclosure don't come to the amount of money that's in the credit enhancement pool. So, but that bond got a pretty nasty mark, and it was in the intermediate fund.
Was that reflected in last night's pricing?
Yes.
I thank you. That answers my questions.
Okay, so that's really, again, just to follow on there with Alan, is the marks are going to be somewhat volatile on these bonds, but you know, I think that that's also the case, whether it be in stocks or bonds, that you know we've all been through these cycles. So again, that may or may not have anything to do with the underlying value of that securities is where they begin to trade. Next.
Your next question comes from Mike Fonte.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Some of these, I have customers that own RMA, H, and RSF. And on the stock price, those guys are down about 7.75% from the middle of last month. And they're at annual lows. That you think we're close to the point where, you know, the disparity between net asset value and stock price on those has gotten as big as it's going to get?
Well, you know, that's impossible for me to say. We go back, if we take a little running start at these stocks got to, you know, close to $18 a share.
Yep.
In the middle of last year, and when we had to reduce the dividend by a penny, and they took a big hit there and came down a good bit, but then began to recover and wound up getting, you know, fairly well recovered. I thought that the market stresses of the last few weeks probably provided a good opportunity to buy, but of course today set a new low on those. But I think that was precipitated more by some press releases than by any actual change in fundamentals. I do like those assets down here. I have, those of you who have followed my commentary over the quarters and years know that I hate to pay a premium for anything. And so the fact that they got to the very high premium was not of nothing I could do about that or say about that, but again, they got there. And then I do think a much lower premium to net asset value is certainly a more reasonable place to look at these funds. But in saying that, there is such a demand, there is a tremendous demand for income producing assets in the marketplace. I mean, we live in a 4-5% world right now. CDs, municipals, treasuries, all can be bracketed in a 4%, you know, 3.5-4.5% yield. So the very idea that something's paying, you know, 9, 10, 11%, most people haven't saved enough money in their life to live on 4% return. So I think that that's one of the things that continues to push the prices of these closed-end funds higher whenever we're able to produce the dividend. And again, our capacity of producing that dividend is actually improved by this sort of volatile market. In spite of the fact that it does cause a lot of concern, I don't want to use the word panic, but people certainly do begin to wring their hands over the volatility. But actually, the ability to produce dividends in the future is enhanced by this sort of volatility. So we want to take advantage of that. Now, as to answering your question, is do I think it's as close to the bottom? There's no way to know. I mean, I don't have any idea who owns all the stock or what their indication of selling it would be. I do feel very good about being able to produce a dividend from here. So I believe that our earnings capacity is, in fact, better than it was 6 weeks ago, not less.
One more quick one. You kind of hinted at the fact that the percentage of the income in the portfolios that's attributable to the subprime bonds might be higher
than the 13 to 15% level of exposure, and that makes sense. Can I just assume that the dividend may contract by, you know, 20-ish percent, or is that the assumption we're supposed to make?
No, I don't think
that would be a fault
follow. I think that, you know, a bond that may be marked down that doesn't have anything to do with whether or not it's paying its coupon.
Okay.
So bonds may be marked down 10 or 15 points, but their coupon paying continues. Okay. And if we look at a bond that has, you know, good credit enhancement and the collateral is in fact performing as expected, then I wouldn't expect any contraction in that bond's income production.
I understand that.
However, when you discount an asset, you're saying to yourself, I am discounting the probability that it may not pay as much in the future. And of course, when you get into a widespread market contraction in a certain asset category like this, the old saying, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, goes a long way. All these assets come down. In fact, we've seen a contraction in the stock market that really is kind of more related to the news going on in subprime, right? So we've also seen a widening in spreads in corporate high yield, which has a lot to do with, you know, just the general market skittishness reaction to what's going on in subprime. So I don't expect that the income production from these assets will be diminished. Certainly not within in the time frame that I can see right now.
Thank you. That was all.
Okay.
Once again, as a reminder, if you would like to pose a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from John Lyons.
Hey, Jim. This is Jonathan, guys downtown. How you doing?
Good.
Question. I know that you were talking about the fact you can't tell whether it's the bottom or not. But personally, do you think this is a good buy right now? Like with RHY being so close to NAV.
Yeah, Jonathan, I would think so. But markets always go further than you think. You know, both ways, up and down. So I have to be very careful in answering that sort of question. You know, I personally am very involved, you know, from my own personal financial perspective in these funds and believe in them. I believe that they're, as you know, the original story was a very diversified, income-oriented product. Its mission and objective is to generate a lot of cash flow. And I believe we're still on track to do that. And in fact, if I were building a portfolio again today, I would include subprime again today. If you said, put together a new portfolio, it would have some subprime in it. Because I just believe that some of the assets out there are just absolutely gifts right now. So that's what we're working on doing.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Woody Bagwell.
Hey, Jim.
Hello, Woody.
How you doing today?
Well, I've got a few fires here and there.
Well, I hope you're out there picking up some of those gifts for us that they've got. My question is about hedge funds, and they're leveraged, and I'm sure they're in this subprime area a lot, and they're having to unwind, and I guess when they're unwinding, of course, that's driving the prices of these securities down, but are they also having to go out and, you know, is there collateral damage? I mean, are they having to also sell the IBMs of the world? And that's what I think is happening. That's what happened to the whole market.
Boy, I tell you what, Woody. Now that's a good question because I believe I think you're sniffing around the right place there.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I do. The other thing is, if you're faced with a margin call, you usually are trying to sell. You'll sell the best asset you've got.
Right.
You know, or the asset that you feel like is the most fairly valued.
Unfortunately, I've had to do that.
Yeah. Well, the situation with aircraft, for instance. I'm telling you, the first quarter has been one of the hottest periods ever for aircraft leases. And we saw the steam come out of those here in the last 2 weeks. You know, bonds had moved from 65 to 75 or back to 69, 70.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the remittance shows that lease revenue is still up again on aircraft. But I believe that those levered players would have to source capital from those assets first.
Right.
So that probably would be the case. If you were long some of the subprime stocks like New Century or Lend, which is accredited or what have you, you probably not want to try to. You may not want to try to source your margin call from those items more than you would, say, the broader market.
What you're saying, you got to sell what you can sell.
That's right.
Well, I hope that's the gifts you're able to pick up.
Well, you know, I believe that there are certainly some opportunities presented there. I have purchased several items in the last 2 weeks in subprime. Generally speaking, I've been able to pick up very good quality, what I feel like are really good bonds at good yields. So, you know, that's I don't think there's any hurry. People ask me about timing. I don't think you have to be in a hurry because this stuff usually takes a while to work its way through.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, you're doing a great job, and we appreciate you here in Montgomery.
Thank you, Woody.
All right, buddy.
Again, that is star one to post a question. Your next question comes from Russell Stein.
Jim, the main thing I'm interested in is the cash flow. And did I hear you correctly that the 14 cents isn't paying out everything that we get monthly?
Well, going back to last year, we had to reduce our dividend from 15 to 14, and we frankly had a whole lot of we had a lot of trouble earning 14 last year, and I know that we were even under 14 cents per share in some of the months last year in the closed-end funds. In the last, say, 2 to 3 months, I'd say December, January, and February, we've been able to earn more than that in those closed-end funds. And that is directly attributable to the stress in the marketplace.
Right. Okay. All right. So, and
you can really sort of track what's going on with the earnings capacity in the closed-end funds by watching the dividend levels in the open-end high-income fund.
Okay.
Does that help you, Russell?
Yeah, it answers where I'm headed, because if we're reinvesting that cash flow and we're getting a 5% discount and there's no commission on it, the cash flow model at 14 cents is going to build out down here at these prices on all four of them at a very attractive rate, because we're getting more shares.
Well, I want to steer clear from being too much in sales here this afternoon. I want to try to give you any facts and that sort of thing. And I'll just reiterate that you know, when we put if we did another $400 million fund today, we would put subprime in it today.
Yeah.
Because it's going to work to some degree, but in the same way, if you were to ask me last spring whether or not I would buy any auto-related paper, I would have said yes, because when the markets are really puking stuff out, pardon me, I don't mean to be too crude here, but it pays to be a buyer at that point.
Yeah.
And it is a very difficult to do. It is very difficult. I do this for a living. Sometimes I wonder why, and I'm not sure I will forever, but I'm telling you, it pays to be a buyer when people rush for the exit, and whenever the, you know, it seems awfully simple to say, but when the world thinks everything is great, you probably ought to sell some, no matter what.
Yeah, in 98, when it really unwound and the street, the firms on the street quit making bids on the low-rated corporates, they came back within 3 to 6 months, and everyone was back within 8 months. This hadn't gotten that bad yet, has it?
I don't think so. It's really a smaller part of the pie, but it's gotten a lot of, as we all know, the media is amplified, and it's almost like an exponential exposure these days, even from 98 to 2007. And I do remember that, and I think that's an interesting point that you bring up, Russell, is in my worst relative performance year in the separate account portfolios that I managed was 1998. I had very bad relative performance because I'm a spread manager. That is, I'm a credit manager, and 1998 was a terrible year for for credit because everything widened.
Yeah.
Corporates widened, commercial mortgage-backed securities widened, everything widened. But then the following 2 years were two of my best years as those spreads contracted back in.
And as the cash flow, as the predictable coupon that you did select was able to work for you.
Well, that's right. At the end of over long periods of time, you have fixed income assets that gyrate with regard to principal value. But as you stretch the time period from 1 year to 2 year to 3 year, 5 to 10 years, the performance of a fixed income portfolio is the income it generates.
That's right.
I've got, accounts that I can go back, 12 years and looking at them. And if I look at that return for that whole period of time, 99% of the return is the income it generated.
Yeah.
Now, you say you take a portfolio for one quarter or for 1 year, and you may have a big move in the principal of that portfolio. But as it stays invested and works for longer periods of time, it becomes a very highly correlated to the amount of income generated. And if you watch the performance of our open-end high-income fund, early in the year, we're always behind because there's principal movement. Those people who catch good principal moves always are ahead. But late in the year, we always grind our way back up toward the top.
Yeah.
We always get because we've accumulated more income. And so the longer the time frame runs, the better off our income production makes us look.
Yeah. Thank you much.
Thank you, Russell.
There appears to be no more questions at this time. I will turn the floor over back to your host, Mr. Jim Kelso, for any closing remarks.
Just very quickly, thank you for joining me. I hope this has been helpful to you. Markets are nerve-rattling at times, and makes it a bit tedious for me, but I appreciate all of you. You've been very helpful. We certainly enjoy serving you and producing a product for your customers that we every day we go to work thinking we've got a good idea and we're going to try to execute it. So please be in contact with Courtney if you need anything, and we'll go back to work. Thank you, fellas.
This concludes today's Jim Kelso Morgan Asset Management Conference Call. You may now disconnect.